The Bears went 7-9 and missed the playoffs for the third straight year following a Super Bowl run. Turner's second stint as Chicago's offensive coordinator lasted 5 years, but ended with the Bears ranked 23rd in yards per game and 29th in rushing. Boise State used its bag of tricks, pulling off a fake punt at their own 33-yard line. It led to a decisive touchdown that gave the 6th-rated Broncos a 17-10 victory over number 3 TCU in the Fiesta Bowl. Boise State ends the year 14-0. Tonight it's the Orange Bowl in Miami, featuring number 9 Georgia Tech against number 10 Iowa. Iowa relies on a stingy defense, while Georgia Tech ranks 2nd in the nation in rushing yards per game. The upset of the night in college basketball last night happened in South Carolina, where the College of Charleston hit 13 of 32 three-pointers and upset 9th-ranked North Carolina 82-79 in overtime. Among men's college games tonight, Illinois hosts Iowa. Tip-off is at 8 o'clock. The Chicago Bulls try to shake off last night's home loss to Oklahoma City when they play the Bobcats tonight in Charlotte. The loss snapped a 4-game winning streak for the Bulls. The Bobcats are 11-4 on their home floor. And the Chicago Blackhawks host the Minnesota Wild tonight. The Hawks' offense is in a groove with at least 4 goals in 6 consecutive games. The Wild have allowed at least 4 goals in 3 straight losses. That's sports.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting audiences with an exciting January schedule of events featuring the Moscow Festival Ballet, Kronos Quartet with Wu Man, and Michael Rouse. More information can be found online at KrannertCenter.com.
Head injury sidelined 2 Miami Dolphins quarterbacks in a game this past Sunday. It's the latest in a series of high-profile incidents involving football head injuries. There are worries about the long-term effects of those injuries, and the U.S. House Judiciary Committee held a special hearing about the matter yesterday in Detroit. Michigan Radio's Sarah Swick reports.
Members of the House Judiciary Committee say it's appropriate for Congress to investigate the NFL's concussion policies because those policies set the standard for all of football, from peewee on up. A growing body of scientific evidence shows that heavy contact sports like football can cause long-term brain damage. And football has been rocked by a series of concussion-related scandals recently. Tennessee Congressman Steve Cohen named the latest, the firing of Texas Tech coach Mike Leach after he allegedly disciplined a concussed player by making him stand in a dark shed.
You should be sent to the neurosurgeon, not to the shed.
The committee yesterday heard from a wide range of stakeholders, including leading researcher Bennett Amalu, co-director of the Brain Injury Research Institute at West Virginia University. Amalu studies the brain tissue of ex-football players and says he diagnosed the first case of what he calls chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, in 2002. Amalu says repeated blows to the head cause proteins to accumulate in brain cells and can manifest as a unique type of dementia. But Dr. Amalu says it's not just the spectacular blows that cause CTE. It's also the heavy contact that comes with the game.
Sub-concussions or blows to the head, which may not manifest with incapacitating symptoms, are equally as important as concussions.
But Dr. Amalu's research isn't universally accepted. His testimony was refuted by fellow panelist Ira Kasson, a neurologist and former co-chairman of the NFL's Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Committee. Kasson resigned that position in November after the NFL Players Association accused him of bias as he continues to deny a conclusive link between football and long-term brain damage. But Dr. Kasson says he stands by that research.
Despite current harsh criticism from the media and others, I will continue to follow the evidence. My allegiance is to scientific truth.
Kasson says his position on football head injuries has been skewed in the media and by members of Congress for what he calls political reasons. But Congressman Steve Cohen says without congressional action, the NFL wouldn't be taking concussions as seriously.
So isn't politicalization a little bit more important, just like erring on the side of caution and lives in the balance, rather than waiting for the ultimate perfect scientific data and how many more football players might have brain damage?
There are other problems for policymakers. Neurologists don't even agree on what exactly constitutes a concussion. And then there's football's rough and tough culture. Reggie McKenzie played college and pro football in the 1960s and 70s and says back then, some players wouldn't remember how a game had ended until they saw the score the next day.
I've been there. That has happened to me. So, yeah, I'm here because, yeah, I'm concerned not only about young people that's coming after me, but I'm also concerned about Reggie McKenzie.
McKenzie says possible long-term brain damage is a growing concern among players. The NFL Players Association now wants the league to release the most recent concussion data, something it argues is crucial for further research. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Swick in Detroit.
In the years before her career was cut short, the Mexican-American singer Lassa de Sala sold a million records. Many kinds of people fell in love with her music, and especially her voice. Lassa de Sala died January 1st after a two-year battle with cancer at the age of 37. Here's NPR's Vince Pearson.
Singer Lassa de Sala was a highly emotional singer who performed a wild mix of musical styles. Her music was passionate, fantastical, carnivalesque. Lassa, as she's known, was born in upstate New York in 1972. She grew up in a bohemian family. Her father was Mexican, her mother was American. They spent much of their time like nomads, traveling between the two countries. In a 1998 interview, Lassa told NPR's Jackie Leiden that the family lived in a series of school buses and trailers filled with music and books.
My father listened to old Mexican music and old American music too, like oldies. Mm-hmm. And my mother listened to gypsy music, Arab music, South American and Mexican. And we started performing very early for each other. Hmm. So by the time I was 6 years old, I would often be doing shows for my whole family that would go on for hours and hours. And it was kind of our way of entertaining ourselves.
La Virgen se está peinando entre cortina y cortina. Los cabellos son de oro y los peines de plata fina.
In 1997, Lassa released her first record. La Llorona was a dark, sensual album filled with songs in Spanish about love and loss. Critics said it sounded like Edith Piaf with a Latin twist. Again, Lassa de Sala.
When I started singing and I got up on stage, a lot of kind of unexpected things started coming out of me. There was a lot of sadness and a lot of rage, and those were the songs that I was attracted to singing, and they were the songs that I felt the most when I was on stage.
Two other records followed. Lassa sold more than a million copies, and she toured the world. On the side, she fulfilled another longtime dream, joining her sisters in their traveling French circus. Here she is in another interview with NPR's Jackie Leiden.
One of my sisters is a contortionist and acrobat, and one of them is a tight wire walker.
The conversation must never get boring in your family.
Never. Boredom is not one of the major problems of my family.
Throughout her career, myth and fantasy were major influences. Lassa grew up reading fairy tales and incorporating them into her songs, like Floricanto.
Mi corazón sufre y se llena de enojo. Solo una vez se nace.
I wrote that song with my father. And he had shown me an Aztec poem. And Aztec poetry is all about this conflict that the heart goes through because of loving life and finding life so beautiful and yet knowing that we're not immortal.
That's Lassa de Sala speaking in 1998. Last week, she died of breast cancer at the age of 37. Vince Pearson, NPR News.
When the band Kansas played in Macomb, Illinois last month, it wasn't just another show. The rock group teamed up with Western Illinois University's Symphony Orchestra. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for orchestra members. Illinois Public Radio's Alex Degman has the story.
The big Western Hall crowd did not hide what they thought of the concert. Standing ovations after every song, squeals of delight when their favorites were played on a huge backdrop of orchestral music. This was not your typical McComb concert. But just what does it take to prepare for a show of this caliber?
45.
Practice, and lots of it.
45. 1, 2, ready, and...
That's WIU's Director of Orchestral Activities, Dr. Richard Huey, conducting rehearsal. He says the Bureau of Cultural Affairs approached him more than a year ago about appearing on stage with Kansas. Huey told the BCA the orchestra schedule had already been set, but a date in early December the following season would work. And that's exactly what he got. It coincided with Kansas's most recent tour, which just ended last week. Huey says as a conductor, there's a lot of information he needs beforehand so he can make sure his musicians are up to the task.
I'd like to see a score or two of the pieces we'd be playing so that I know whether or not it's something that our orchestra can do well. And so it was, you know, the kinds of questions that one has to think through before one can say yes to a project like this.
Kansas's own conductor, Larry Baird, provided Huey with the scores. Huey says it was then just a matter of practicing as if it were any other concert.
I go in with a metronome, and I set those tempos that he has indicated in the score, and we play him through in those tempos, and I'm sure that when the band gets together with the orchestra, everything will be fine.
The WIU Symphony Orchestra contains several dozen players across all grade levels. Many said they were excited at the opportunity to play with Kansas. One such person is freshman violin player Ariel Wilson. She's been playing since the fourth grade. She's not at all surprised that Kansas went on tour with various orchestras. She says the band's music complements orchestral music quite well.
Kansas seems pretty exciting. My dad used to listen to them a lot, so it's going to be interesting. I've never played with a classic rock band before. I think it's a great opportunity for all of us.
Wilson says she and her stand partner spent a good amount of time practicing the music outside of organized rehearsals. She says that's what they do in preparation for any performance, no matter what music they're playing. But she says playing alongside rock music presents new challenges.
There were some rhythms that actually I'd never even played before that they had written in.
Like the time signature?
Like
616.
616
and
what
was the other one? The 7. It was like
7-8.
7-8 something like. But we'd never played those before, so we kind of worked on them together as a group and went from there.
Wilson says she was a little nervous when the orchestra first started practicing for the show. But when she started doing some research and watching the band's music videos, that's when the butterflies got stronger. After a handful of rehearsals with Dr. Huey, the WIU Orchestra was prepared for the final practice, the sound check.
Ready, Larry?
The sound check was the last practice before the big show. Kansas and the WIU Orchestra played together on stage for the first time an hour before the doors opened. It was also the first time orchestra members got to meet the members of Kansas. Senior cello player Pablo Tinajero says the band members were down to earth and a pleasure to work with.
They had a really nice sense of humor. When the conductor wanted to work on something or rehearse something, they were, you know, paying attention. And it was they were good. They were very easy to work with.
Hello, Western Hall.
That's Mick Cumby of the Performing Arts Society, who welcomed the hundreds of people to the venue. Before long, it was showtime. Reporters were under strict orders not to record or photograph the show. And that's a shame because Kansas and the WIU Orchestra put on a spectacular performance. They played for about 2 hours and treated the audience to the new and the old. Of course, the show featured everyone's favorites, Carry On Wayward Son, Dust in the Wind, and Point of No Return. Each elicited a raucous standing ovation. After the show, Pablo Tinajero said he was very pleased with how the orchestra performed, even though his group might have been drowned out at times thanks to Western Hall's acoustics.
I think we're a great orchestra, and I think we did well, and it was a lot of fun. The first time we got to play with this with the band was today, so it was kind of it all just kind of made sense at the end. So we were a little confused at first, but I think it all went really well.
Tinajero was not the only one who enjoyed the performance. To gauge the success of the show, all you have to do is listen to the crowd's appreciation. I'm Alex Degman.
For Joe Strauss, growing the Republican Party was part of growing up.
I came from a pioneer Republican family. My mother, in the 60s when I was a very young child, she was the organizer of the Nixon Girls in San Antonio.
He's the Speaker of the Texas House and a rising star of the GOP, a new breed of Republican from an old Republican family. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
today from 4 to 7 on WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
It's 5 minutes before 3 o'clock. Tomorrow on the Afternoon Magazine, in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we'll talk with writer Ashley Merriman. Together with Poe Bronson, she is co-author of Nurture Shock, New Thinking About Children. That's the topic tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine.
Earth and Sky.
In the United States, around 7% of the country's total greenhouse gas emissions come from the way we raise and grow food. Some argue the percentage is even higher. A new program aims to reduce such emissions, according to U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack.
Vilsack announced in late 2009 that the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or the USDA, will partner with American dairy farmers to help them convert animal manure into energy.
In this program, the methane found in animal waste will be used to generate electricity. This prevents methane from entering the atmosphere, where it contributes to global warming. Vilsack said that manure is converted to electricity with what's called anaerobic digester technology. Manure is broken down and used to power generators.
Currently, only a small percentage of U.S. dairies are equipped with anaerobic digesters. Vilsack said this number will increase to help the USDA meet its goal of reducing 25% of its greenhouse gas emissions by 2020. As Vilsack noted at a recent climate meeting,
the USDA stands ready to partner with American agriculture to make sure that there are resources and incentives to get the job done as quickly and as efficiently and as effectively as possible.
We have more interviews at our website. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible by the Friends of WILL and by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta is now open in their new location at Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377.
3 minutes before 3 o'clock. The forecast for Illinois and Indiana, topped by winter storm watches, which have been issued for northwestern Illinois from tomorrow afternoon through Friday night, and in southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana from tomorrow evening through Thursday afternoon. Mike Sola's forecast for the two states this afternoon: in northern Indiana, mostly cloudy with snow showers and snow squalls. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. Highs ranging from 10 in northwestern Illinois to 26 in the south. Tonight in northern Indiana, mostly cloudy with a few snow showers and flurries. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy and cold. Lows ranging from 5 below zero in northwestern Illinois.